Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to the Extra Inch podcast. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, mate.
No Barley tonight. He's off being a good Samaritan. He's done the right thing for once, so we'll miss Barley, but we'll catch up with him another time. But we've got lots to talk about. It's the end of a transfer window, and Spurs have signed players, which is nice. So let's talk about that. Giovanni Lo Celso, who is actually called Giovanni Lo Celso. Thanks for that, Nathan. You set me up good there, didn't you?
Where did I hear Lo Celso from first? Back originally, I was calling him Lo Celso. I remember
Same.
This. And then I heard, I don't know, someone Spanish or someone Argentinian calling him Lo Celso, and I changed it up. So I'm gonna track down who's responsible. It's like a...
I think someone posted a clip of highlights footage, and the commentator said Lo Celso within the highlights footage, and therefore it's not our fault. What do you know about him, and do you like him, and how do you think he's going to fit in?
Yeah, I do like him. I do think he's really good. We talked to him a little bit. He mainly played as more of a central midfielder in Argentina, I think, and also, but especially at PSG. And then for Betis, he moved forward, where he sometimes played behind the front two in a diamond, or in the front two with a back five or whatever. And scored a bunch of goals for Betis last season, but most of his career, he's been a sort of a creative, not quite controlling, but a sort of a calm playmaker type. And I think that's more of the side we'll see of him, though I also think that we will lean into his positional versatility and use him wherever we need him. But I mean, the obvious similarity for us is with Eriksen, who's still at the club. So if Eriksen is staying, it'll be really interesting to see how they're used in tandem. But I think at least long term, the idea is that Lo Celso is his long term replacement. Now, again, he's really good. He's really exciting. He's really special. He's an excellent purchase. But there are definitely ways in which he is a downgrade on Eriksen, right? And that's not anything to get all upset about, because, like, essentially what I'm talking about is the creation of chances. And that's because Eriksen absolutely churns them out at a historic rate, and very few players in the world are capable of doing that. So Lo Celso is a downgrade on that part. But you're trading in. He goes a bit harder into 50-50s. He's more comfortable than Eriksen in deeper positions. He may well play in a midfield too. We'll see about that.
Other things.
Yeah, other things.
Do you know what? I think I love Eriksen, obviously. I think he's a remarkable
player. No, he's a better finisher. Sorry, mate. he's a better finisher. Sorry.
It's fine.
Go on.
I think Eriksen is brilliant, and I hope he stays. But I think Lo Celso adds something if he's to play in the eight role that Eriksen played last year. Eriksen was not half the player in that role, in my opinion. I thought he was a lot better when he was playing further up the pitch for us, either on the left or on the right, and tucking into midfield and doing some midfieldy things occasionally. But Lo Celso, for me, is a better defensive player. who can then also drive forward with the ball and still maintains good creative passing. So, yeah, I mean, you can't replace Eriksen when you're a club like Spurs. It's almost impossible to do. So what you have to do is look for a similar skill set that might be, you know, not quite as good in some areas, but, you know, perhaps better in other areas. And whilst, yes, you're right, we are downgrading in terms of his creative abilities, we're probably upgrading in his defensive screening. So if we are to play a diamond, and we'll come back to that, I think it's probably a better fit in our midfield. And he's 23. The upside is amazing. It's a great time to get him. I'm intrigued by the structure of the deal. So we've got him on loan, and we've, you know, presumably paid quite a significant loan fee for him for the year with an obligation to buy. And the rumour is that this is designed to... So some of the loan fee is then taken off the eventual fee we pay next year, which means that PSG get less of a percentage when we eventually buy him. Is that what you've heard as well?
Yeah, I've heard similar. I mean, you know, it's not like we ever directly deal with PSG and therefore have to maintain a good relationship with them.
Right. And I mean, the thing is, I do believe that could be true because it seems too weird to not be true. And also we've been chasing him for the whole summer. So you'd think we'd have sorted out a deal some way by now. But are PSG's lawyers really that stupid? That's the only thing I'm thinking. Like, that is like an obvious loophole. And I'd be quite surprised if they missed that one, but who knows?
So did we do something similar before with, with Swansea? So we had a back and forth, we had a player swap situation. Was it how we got Sigurdsson? I think Sigurdsson had a buy-on clause, and so we didn't buy him. We swapped. Oh, no, I'm getting it all mixed up and wrong and backwards.
Carroll, was it? I forget. Because it was Vorm and Sigurdsson moved from Swansea to us. I forget as well. I think you're right. We did something strange with Zeki Fryers as well. to avoid him going to Man U.
So we've got previous in this.
We've got previous. Yeah, sure. So aside from Lo Celso, and I'm so tempted to keep saying Lo Celso, but I must retrain my brain. We also signed Ryan Sessegnon, who a lot of people are down on because he didn't have such a great season last year. But in my opinion, he has a huge upside. What do you think of Sessegnon, Nathan?
I love him. I've been big on him for a while. I thought we were going to get him like a couple of years ago, and then it looked like that went away and I sort of given up and I'd resigned to the idea that he was going to go to City or he, you know, whatever else. And then he had this by perception poor season at Fulham, which I don't agree with at all. And suddenly he's back in our scopes and hey, we've landed him. Yeah, I'm really, really excited by him. I keep saying that for me, and it seems to be echoed by Pochettino based on the reports coming out, but for me, his future is best off playing left back. But if he, you know, can't transition to returning to left back, if he can't handle that defensive side, then he's still a young player with a brilliant attacking upside. He can play a variety of attacking roles. I watched a fair bit of him at England youth level because he's played alongside Marcus Edwards and Kyle Walker-Peters and Foden and everyone quite a bit, and he really stood out maybe as the best player on the pitch in an absolutely outstanding group of talented players. You know, the best England generation for at least a very long time. Yeah, he's a special player.
And the strange thing about Sessegnon is that he's 19. He's so young. So he's younger than TJ Ayoma and Tashaan Oakley-Booth, which is just absolutely nuts. He's played just under 9,000 minutes of first-team football and over 2,000 in the Premier League. So, I mean, that's highly unusual. You get a young player who has that many minutes under their belt. So we've got a bargain with Sessegnon. I think he's got a lot of growth to do, but the ceiling is enormously high. Very exciting prospect. Like you, I mean, if he doesn't end up being a great left back, and I personally think he will be a left back in time, he's a really good attacking midfielder. He can play either side. I've even seen him play in the middle.
Yep.
He's got lovely awareness of space. And the only thing is, I mean, he's not super fast. He hasn't got that kind of acceleration yet. And I say yet because we know that we've seen players like Harry Kane, for example, develop that over time. You know, you work on the right muscle groups and you practice that kind of standing start stuff over time, and that can be added to a player's repertoire. And I feel like Sessegnon with a burst of acceleration would be like almost Bale-esque in the way he could be performing. I'm massively excited about Sessegnon. I think he's a really good signing. Bit disappointed that Onomar's gone the other way, but that was kind of inevitable at this point. And I'm pleased for Onomar that he's now got a permanent move and will hopefully get regular games in midfield, because I think there's a good player there. And you know, he was stagnating at Spurs over a number of years. So best of luck to him. But yeah, I think the signings we've made today on deadline day are hugely exciting. And one thing I was looking at and thinking about is how I feel about the window as a whole. And I tweeted that if you'd slept for the whole summer and just woken up today and realised that we've signed Jack Clarke, Ndombele, Lo Celso and Sessegnon, you'd be absolutely thrilled with that. That is a remarkable upgrade on our squad. Obviously seeing Trippier, Lee, Vorm, Llorente, Onomer and Janssen, none of those are players that either are going to trouble the first team or that we particularly like in Trippier's case. So that is a significant upgrade. The only thing is, the only downside is, we've been chasing these players seemingly since the start of the window, and it's taken us quite a long time to land them. Are you worried about that, Nathan? Are you worried that it's going to take Lo Celso and Sessegnon time to adapt to Pochettino's methods, and you know, they might ultimately have a bit of a bedding in period like Lucas did, for example?
So Alistair Gold made a good point on Twitter a few hours ago where he said that so Lo Celso was at Copa America and Sessegnon was injured, so neither of these players could realistically be signed much earlier than we did actually agree the deals for them. They wouldn't have been, you know, playing in the pre-season squads. I also think that neither of these are players that we desperately need to perform, you know, this weekend. I the player that we needed to bed in early, Tanguy Ndombele, we got in early. I think certainly Sessegnon can really take his time to develop into a left back, because we still have two left backs at the club. And Lo Celso, there's not a huge rush, especially, again, Eriksen is still at the club, but there's not a huge rush for him. I think that, you know, he can take a couple of months and we aren't like all panic stations. We've and most Spurs fans has, but we especially have complained about the club getting players in late, but I don't think that's a huge concern in these particular cases.
Okay, you made me feel better about that, to be fair. So the other things that were rumoured to be happening today, we had a brief dalliance with Dybala, which I guess we'll never know what happened there, but it definitely seemed for a while so that was a deal that was going to happen, and then suddenly it was all off again. And you
you're right. I made myself believe, I allowed myself to believe that that my club, the little old Tottenham Hotspur, were going to sign Paulo Dybala. What an idiot I am!
I know. And then the image right stuff hits, and who knows what went on there. There's lots of conflicting stories around that, and I guess we'll never know the truth, as it were. But also Youssef Attal, who you are big on. Following your recommendations, I've watched quite a bit of him now and am big on him also. When it seemed for a while like we might offload Aurier and sign Attal, I was very excited. And we'll come on to right back, because I think there is a slight concern there, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But were you disappointed that we couldn't land Attal?
Yeah, so we go back to your sort of if you slept through the summer and you heard who we signed thing. Yeah, the first thing I would say would be, you know, oh my God, I can't believe we've signed three players of this caliber. And then I would say, wait, what is happening at right back? Like, has Sissoko been playing at right back in pre-season? You don't want to sort of moan, especially not today. You don't want to be like, oh, and I have been doing this, I'm guilty of doing this. You don't want to be like, oh, we haven't signed a right back, because we haven't. But like, we should focus on the positive. But also, like, we haven't signed a right back.
Yeah. So let's do the right back thing now, because we've got ourselves, we've said it before many, many times, that we've got ourselves into a pickle with our right back. So last season we had Trippier, we had Aurier, we had Walker-Peters. We, as a result of having three, Walker-Peters barely played. So we don't really know what he can or can't do. What we do know is that Walker-Peters was absolutely outstanding for the under-18s. He was in the England squad throughout his youth career. He is a technically excellent player. He's a very strong dribbler. He's creative from right back. He's got reasonable recovery pace, but he's very small. He gets knocked off the ball fairly easily. He loses a lot of aerial challenges. So there are sort of question marks there. And Aurier is a player who has been incredibly hit and miss at Spurs so far. When he's been good, he's been absolutely fine, verging on better than fine. When he's been bad, he's been an absolute nightmare, a calamity, and he's been laughed off the pitch for taking foul throws. You know, that is a risk, leaving yourself with an untried player and Serge Aurier at right back. Is Sissoko a realistic option? Is Wan-Foyth a realistic option? Or do we just go with Walker-Peters and see what happens?
I think all of them are in a similar boat in that all of them have the potential to work out. Kai Walker-Peters as a player as a whole very much has the potential to work out. The idea of Sissoko at right back, you know, when you look at his skill set, what his strengths and weaknesses are, you go, well, that profiles quite well as a right back. Foyth, again, I've mentioned my qualms over his pace, but otherwise he's a really good, talented young player. So all of them have a good reason why they may well work out well as a right back, but none of them are proven. None of them have been experimented with while we've had the chance to. So all of them high risk. Okay, maybe if you've got three gambles, one of them's going to pay off, right? But it still means that we have to fail through two of them before we arrive at something going well there for us.
Is one solution playing three at the back and having Walker-Peters and Sessegnon as wingbacks?
Yeah, I think that can help. I think that sort of decreases the defensive duty, essentially, because they're playing a slightly more attacking role. But there's not a huge amount of difference between a Pochettino fullback and a Pochettino wingback.
Yeah.
And I also think that the investments that we've made as midfield and the midfielders that we've kept means that it's going to be hard to find a way to get three centre-backs onto the pitch. You know, one of your faves is going to miss out in order to get, you know, Foyth or Sanchez into the 11.
Absolutely right. Okay, so we're going to turn now to the first game of the season, which is Aston Villa. And I had the privilege of speaking to Martin Lawrence, who's head of content creation at whoscored.com, and more importantly, a big Villa fan. I really enjoyed my chat with Martin. He was great, and I hope you enjoyed what he had to say. Martin, firstly, tell us about yourself, both your job at Who Scored as well as your fandom, your dalliance with Aston Villa.
Yeah, okay, hi there. I started at Who Scored 8 years ago now, over 8 years ago. Sort of chanced my arm at joining to become a Spanish preview writer, believe it or not, and ended up landing a sort of editorial role. And from there, I've sort of progressed up the ladder, as it were. One of the parts of the furniture now, so I've been there for a time. In terms of Villa, I support them because of my eldest brother, really. And the story behind that, we're both from Colchester, so Essex, so nowhere near Birmingham. But he started supporting Villa because they were the first team he saw beat Manchester United, who were the team that all his friends supported. So that was nice. That little prompt. And since then, I've sort of taken it a bit too far, really. But yeah, I've just supported them ever since I was about five, I'd say.
Nice. November. I suspect we're of a similar age then, because when I was growing up, all my friends at primary school supported Man U. Actually, that's not true. All of them supported different clubs and then started supporting Man U.
Yeah.
One of my dad's proudest things was that I maintained my Spurs fandom when all my mates were changing their allegiance. Can I talk to you a little bit more about Who Scored? It's a fantastic website for many reasons. It was one of the first sites that made stats kind of accessible, and I mean that in a literal sense, so you could actually get your hands on data, but also the way it was presented made it easy for the layman like myself to kind of try and understand what was going on a bit more with data and the way data was recorded. What's it like to work for Who Scored as a company, and where what kind of, how do you see them operating now, because there's so many competitors, obviously. Data is so huge in football now.
What it's like to work there, it's good fun, I can't lie. You get to talk about football all day with people that I've known for years now, so we are a smaller team than most people would think, but just a team of people that love football, really. So I can't complain about going into work every day. In terms of where I see us going in the future, we've always been sort of keen to sort of carry on catering to sort of the mass market, like you say, maybe the layman, as it were. Obviously, there's a lot of great companies out there that delve really deep into statistics and analysis and stuff like that, and we do look to do that as well. But I wasn't there from the very start, but our focus was to create products that gave an idea of how a game panned out and how players performed in particular, without actually having to have watched that game to have an idea straight away live what was happening, how players were performing, and then to take your own knowledge from that and watch the game later if you had to, and sort of garner stuff from that. So it was catered to what it's been a good tool for people. There's been a lot of football blogs that have started since we started and stuff like that, so it's a great tool for them to analyse not only their own players but opposition players and stuff like that. We're used quite frequently by clubs and stuff now in terms of scouting, in terms of our player ratings. Just continuing to do the same things, really. We do have plans to expand in the near future, so it should be exciting times ahead. But yeah, still very much catering towards your average everyday football fan and bringing them the data that they want.
Nice. And if we turn our attentions to Villa a bit,
yeah.
I mean, you've made a huge number of signings, and I don't know if it's too obvious to say or too lazy to ask whether there are concerns over doing a Fulham. Is that something that worries you?
I wouldn't say that it is. I'd say that is sort of a bit quick to say that, just because there are differences in the two. I know Fulham did lose players last summer, but not to the extent that Villa did. We had, I think, effectively when all the loans ended as well, because we had six players on loan, we had, I think it was either 13 or 14 players leave the club at the end of the season with contracts running out and stuff. Not all of them were first team regulars or anything, but senior players. So it left us with a squad of, I think, 15 or 16 players over the age of 21, which obviously isn't enough to go into a Premier League season. And of those players, there were still players like Scott Hogan and Aaron Tishbola, both of whom will leave, not Premier League quality players. So it doesn't surprise me that we made a lot of signings, but I must admit the amount that we have made, not so much the money we've spent, because I think it's been spread around quite wisely, but the amount of signings we've made has been, I don't think any Villa fan would say that hasn't been a surprise. But with Fulham, I think they did a similar number of deals, maybe 12, 13 deals. But I think I wrote an article for The Guardian on it a little while back and researched it. I think around 8 of those deals were made in the final week of the transfer window. And obviously that doesn't give you time to bed players in, get them used to a system. And what Villa have done that Fulham didn't is get players in early, get them used to Dean Smith's way of thinking. And pre-season in general has been very good. We've won every game in pre-season, some good wins in there as well, beat Leipzig in Leipzig. So, yeah, the new recruits have bedded in well from what we can tell. When you sign that many players, obviously you can't guarantee that. I'd say in any transfer window, you're looking at around half of those players being what you consider big successes, and that would be a good return. So if 6 or 7 of those players turn out to be good first-team players, then I think it's a good transfer window.
That's a really pertinent point you made about getting the players in early and giving them a chance to adapt to the manager's system, particularly as Spurs fans are having this exact conversation about our kind of sluggish approach to the transfer window, where we seem to be doing deals quite late on and we're worried, therefore, that players won't be up to speed for a few weeks. Villa have obviously done the absolute opposite. Is there someone who's stood out for you in pre-season so far that you've kind of... You didn't necessarily know much about, who's immediately caught your eye?
From the new signings, I'd say, of those that have maybe impressed more than they expected, I'd say the two players on the right, Fred Gilbert, the right back, who we actually signed in January and then loaned back to Caen for the second half of the season, and Hotter from Birmingham, ironically. When he was at Brentford under Dean Smith, he was a really talented player. And I think without wanting to dig out Birmingham too much, their system didn't really suit him. And you can see in pre-season with Villa, under Smith's way of playing again, he's been very strong. He's our cheapest transfer this summer and certainly one of the best performers of the lot. So he's been very good. Again, I think he'll be rotated in and out. I don't think he's a guaranteed starter, but he's been really good. And yeah, Tom Heaton was excellent on his debut against Leipzig. I think that's a great signing. And Wesley to look good up front. So, yeah, all positive so far, really.
Good. Hotter's a player I really like. He's quite an interesting player. He's someone who, when he was at Brentford, he suffered from homesickness. And there was a lot of talk of him going back to Spain regularly. I think he had a young family at the time and he was travelling back and forth a lot. And I think that was why a lot of bigger clubs turned their noses up a little bit, because he clearly had the talent, even back then. So I think he'll be a great signing in time for Villa. If we go back a little bit, and this is something that Nathan's asked me to ask about. Nathan's from our podcast. He said, it seemed like Villa's 2015 summer was fueled by analytical scouting, but it went horribly wrong. Does there, as a result, exist a fear of this approach within your fan base? So you've got players like Amavi, Gay and Vertu and even Traore have gone on to do well, but obviously flopped at Villa. Are your fans now sceptical about using analytics to scout players?
I'd say there's like fan bases from any club. There's always some that are sort of more old school, don't really like the analytical side of things in terms of statistics. So I think there's always going to be some like that. I think that summer, Villa signed a lot of them were the right players, maybe at the wrong time. The mix crucially wasn't right. They maybe weren't the right characters at that time. They weren't all, I wouldn't say they were all flops. Some of them did work. Idrissa Gueye, you could see straight away that he was a very good player. And that's why obviously he stayed in the Premier League with Everton. Jordan Amavi, again, a very good young player who got a serious injury and that really set him back. And Jordan Vertu, for one reason or another, he was another one who suffered from homesickness quite badly, I know that. And we signed them alongside players like Michael Richards, Jolyon Lescott, Rudy Justed. So I'd say it was more sort of some muddled thinking in there. Some of it was analytical, definitely. And I wouldn't say they were bad signings at all, because, like you say, they've gone on to be good players. I don't think any fan can really rule out analytical scouting. Every single club does it. But there has to be a balance, and I think obviously you have to back up statistical profiling with actually going to watch the player regularly, seeing what they're like on the pitch, but also understanding what they're like off the pitch. And I think that's been the big difference this time around. There's been a lot of talk at Villa in terms of signing the right characters, the right mentality of player that's going to fit into the system, fit into the way of thinking at the club, and I think there's a lot of confidence from that. So yeah, I think that's the main difference this time around.
Nice. And obviously they've got you feeding them who scored data on all their potential signings as well. If we talk about Villa more generally, what would you say are your strengths and weaknesses, and what kind of style of play is Smith going to implement this year?
Smith has already stated that his style of play won't change, never. He likes to have the ball. He likes to play high up the pitch at a high tempo, press when he can. It's not always the most defensively sound football, he admit himself. Like if Villa go one up, they tend not to sit back, tend to go for the second. Obviously, that will be tempered a bit in the Premier League. It can't be naive to say that we're going to go and try and dominate teams now. But there's still going to be that ethos that we want to have the ball. We're not as good without the ball. We've got players who can dictate play. To that extent, that's our strength as well in the middle of the pitch. Obviously, Jack Grealish, who Tottenham fans will know well, John McGinn, players that can get about the pitch and create and score goals. So we're good from central areas. In terms of strengths and weaknesses, it's difficult this season because there have been so many changes. It's difficult to know whether the strengths that we had last season will actually carry over. Last season, we scored a lot of goals from crosses, a lot of headed goals. Tammy Abraham is obviously quite prolific in that sense. We scored a decent amount from set pieces, but he's not there anymore. The wingers are all changed. So it's difficult to say what our strengths will be on the pitch. I think one of the main strengths is the coach, Dean Smith. He's come in and implemented his style of play, and everyone knows what they're doing, and he understands the club, obviously, as a fan. He understands the fans. So a strength is having Dean Smith, a Villa fan, as a coach, having Jack Grealish, a Villa fan, as a captain. There's a unity in the group now that wasn't there when we went down. Someone was quite toxic then, and it seems really together now. That's a strength. In terms of weaknesses, again, it's hard to say just because of the amount of changes, but say before Tyrone Mings came in and everything like that, we were shipping hatfuls of goals. We still, even by the end of the season, one of the worst defensive records in the Championship. So I think that's why the signings that we did make early were generally defenders. Signed an entire new back line, including Mings and House, who returned loans and stuff like that. So we need to get defenders in early and get them used to playing together, I think, because there was too much where there was a lack of continuity there last season. The evening goal, four different goalkeepers played over the season, I think. So, yeah, signing Tom Heaton, like I say, has sort of remedied that, I think, assuming he stays clear of injury. So, yeah, that was a weakness last season, a lack of continuity, a lack of depth, which boiled down to Steve Bruce as much as anything else.
It's so nice to hear you speak with such positivity, because I know, you know, Villa fans have been through quite a tough time, and yeah. if fans of my age or around my age, when you think of Aston Villa, you think of one of the elite clubs, you think of like a definitely a top tier club, and it's felt wrong with them not being in a Premier League. And I think Spurs and Villa that have always had a bit of a rivalry, because we have always been clubs of a similar size, clubs that share a city or an area with a rival. And the fans have kind of therefore had a bit of a mini rivalry between us. But I, you know, when Villa went down, I felt terribly, terribly sorry for all of your fan base, because it was just the ownership just ruining things for what was going, you know, a club that was going in the right direction. So it's great to hear you so positive. So if I give you one final question, what are your expectations for the season, Martin?
I think there's fans sort of similar age to myself who this season they're the sort of most optimistic they've been as a Villa fan. Not saying that we'll have our best finish in the Premier League or anything at all like that. That'd be crazy. But there's a, having gone through such a low, to be back on the up, so to speak, there's a buzz about the club. So yeah, we're definitely heading in the right direction. And like I said, under this manager, with these players, there's a connection to the fans and the players now that wasn't there a few seasons ago. Everyone's just really optimistic. I think there's 9 or 10 teams in the Premier League this season that there's nothing between them really. You can throw a blanket over all of them. So there's a lot of scope for where Villa could finish, in my opinion. I don't think, obviously, it'd be naive to say that the sort of the main objective isn't survival, because it has to be, because it is that competitive. But I think Villa will be, and Dean Smith in particular, will be pushing for more. The fans will want more. And I think we'll be sort of aiming for around, certainly mid-table, around 10th at best, maybe, and bottom at worst, sort of thing. Anything. So I think we'll come somewhere in the middle of that. I'd be happy with a 14th, 15th, 16th. I'd be happy with survival, but I think there's more to this team than that.
Lovely. Martin, thank you so much. That was great. It's lovely to get your thoughts on Villa, and, you know, perhaps we'll get you back on for the reverse fixture later in the season. Where can people find you online if they want to follow you?
So I'm on Twitter at MartinLawrence7, or obviously through at Who Scored. That's basically the only place you can follow me.
nice. Well, thank you, Martin. I really appreciate your time, and, you know, best of luck for the season, although perhaps not this first game.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
So thank you again to Martin, who was excellent. Nathan, what do you make of Villa? How do you feel about them?
I haven't paid a huge amount of attention to them, but I understand that there's a bit of fanfare around their summer activity. I know that they've managed to keep Ginn and Grealish, so that's impressive in of its own right. And they seem to have invested fairly heavily. They bought Jota, from Wolves. It seems like they've got some interesting ideas going on at Villa at the moment. So generally, as a season, I think it'll be interesting. But the weekend particularly, I'm really not sure what to expect from them.
Mate, I just need to say, Jota is so Yoda. That is an absolute... That is literally what my dad would say. So perfect. I like Villa. I like Villa this season. I feel like they could be the Wolves of this season. They've got a really exciting young manager. They've signed some really good players. And I think in Grealish and McGinn, they have two supremely talented midfielders. I think Grealish is absolutely nailed on to be in an England squad this season, if not the next England squad. He's excellent. He's such a good player these days. And McGinn will surprise a few people. He's an absolute ball of energy, as I said in the interview with Martin, and a box of tricks. I think McGinn is really special, and I think he'll do well in the Premier League. How do you think we're going to line up for this game? Presumably the new signings aren't going to be available other than Ndombele. So what do you think we do? What formation will we play?
That's a tough one. I haven't really thought specifically about the upcoming game. I get so distracted by sort of transfers and therefore the long term. You don't really think about the weekend. And I think that, like, unfortunately, we have allowed deadline day itself to become an activity. So you don't really think of that being so surely followed by a game, don't you?
But let's map it out now then. So, you know, Lloris is definitely going to be in goal.
The two centre-backs, the Belgians.
Centre-backs, we know, they're going to be the Belgians. I think we have to assume that Danny Rose plays left-back because Davis still isn't fully fit.
Yeah, Rose had a good showing in the pre-season that he was there for. I think the situation with him, even though he was rumoured to be at, was it Watford today? I very much feel the situation with him was sort of, well, you know, if we can find a good transfer for you, you can go. And if we don't, then let's keep you going for another year. I don't think there's any, like, I don't think there's a falling out there. I don't think there's any sort of, like there may well be with Ericsson, I don't think there's any sort of dangling out the window. I think that he's good to go from the off when we're happy.
Yeah. Okay, so we've agreed that Rose is left back unless the whole Watford thing has left him furious, in which case, God, Anthony Georgie's playing left back against Aston Villa. Let's assume Kyle Walker-Peters is going to be the right back because, again, it's him or Sissoko at this point with injury and availability.
Yeah, I would certainly hope. Like, we haven't seen other options. Walker-Peters, I was impressed with him in pre-season, and it's continued the same pattern where I think he has a really promising good game and then he makes a big defensive mistake that, you know, unfortunately overwhelms the rest of his performance. But, you know, we haven't got a better option. So at least he's getting minutes, you know.
Yeah. And then I think it's going to be Winks and Ndombele in midfield.
Yes.
And then ahead of them, I guess it's Ericsson if he's staying. Dele.
I think maybe Lamella might be in for a start for this one. We don't know what the situation with Ericsson, what the feeling is in the club. I think that fans have probably within themselves, without ourselves, exaggerated the situation with Ericsson. He may well be in exactly the same boat of Rose's. Oh, okay, you're staying. That's fine. Start the match. You're fit and everything. Or, yeah, it may well be the worst case scenario where everyone's fallen out and he's, you know, not taking part in training and all that kind of stuff. So in that sort of, let's call it a worst case scenario, obviously Lo Celso isn't ready to start because he's just arrived in the country. I think Lamella would be taking Eriksen's place at the moment.
And then Lucas and Kane up top?
Yeah, I think so.
So are we going like a 4-4-2 diamond then? So with Ndombele, Winks, Lamella and Dele in midfield?
I think the 11 that we've named could well be a diamond, but I also think that it lends itself well to a 4-2-3-1 because I don't think you really want to be playing either of Lamella or Dele as a number 8. I mean, you can definitely play Dele there. He did play there a fair amount the season gone. But for me, that's a 4-2-3-1 with Dele through the middle, Lamella on the right and Lucas on the left. Oh, wait, no, Dele's injured. Which means it'll be Sissoko, which means it pretty much has to be a diamond.
Interesting. Yeah. And that will tie in nicely because I'm going to ask you about our most used formation next season in a moment. So get your thinking cap on about that. Let's talk about the forthcoming season more generally. Have you got anything that kind of immediately comes to mind? What are your general thoughts on how things will go for us this year?
I'm optimistic. Obviously, we've pointed out our major issue at right back. And it's going to be one, like with the midfield, where we bang on about it for a long time. We're probably going to be banging on about this for a long time. And it'll probably, we'll fall into the trap of blaming most of our problems on a single situation, right? I do think that it will cause us problems. I do think it will hold us back, but not as much as I think as our midfield issues did, right? Simply, the middle is more important than the wide areas, right? I don't think teams are going to be able to completely disrupt our entire game as much, right? So I am optimistic. I think that we will improve on the previous season, certainly in the league or not in our week-to-week performances. What that actually sort of works out to doesn't really depend on us, If we can put up an 80-85 point season, we can be really proud of ourselves. We can play some great football in the way. We can, you know, create some historic statistics of our own record breaking. We can celebrate our new stadium in the way that it should be done. And maybe that doesn't work out to a particularly impressive even positioning in the league table, because Liverpool and City at the moment are threatening to continue to be ridiculously good. But we can have a season to be proud of, and that's all I ever really want from my club.
Yeah, that's very, very nicely put. I think I feel the same. I feel like the signings we've made mean that third place should be nailed on this year. I think we can push for second, you know? I really do think we can push for second. I think Liverpool are a really good team, and I feel like Naby Keita will improve them this year because he's had a bit of time to settle in. He's an excellent player, and I think he'll be very good. But Salah dropped off a little last year from the previous season. Mane, I don't think we'll have as good a season as last year. And I can just see us being as good as Liverpool. And I just would love to give them a run for second. I do honestly think that City will finish probably 10 or 12 points ahead of the next best team. With De Bruyne back in the swing of things, I just feel like they're so good. They've signed well. They've got even more depth than they had before. And now they've got Bernardo becoming like one of the best players in the league as well, alongside De Bruyne, who already is one of the best players in the league. I just think they're unstoppable and will accumulate a ridiculous points total. But I think we can push for second, and I'm very excited about that. Nathan, we're going to do some very quick fire thoughts now. Okay. And neither of us has thought about this. We've made a pact not to plan anything.
Okay.
I'm just going to say the things, and we're going to say the first thing that comes into our head, okay? And we can have some fun looking back on this at the end of the season. So what do you think our most used formation will be this season?
Maybe a diamond, but no clear answer.
Okay, I'm going to say 4-2-3-1. I think we're going to go back to old school Poch pressing with the 4-2-3-1.
Nice.
Who do you think is going to be our player of the season?
Tanguy Ndombele.
Yeah, I was really tempted to say the same, but I'm going to be boring and say Harry Kane.
Yeah, fair enough.
Who do you think is going to have their breakthrough season this year?
Oh, I tell you what, I really hope that it's Kyle Walker-Peters.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Can I say Harry Winks?
No, he's already broken through.
He's already broken through. For the record, I think Harry Winks is going to be elite this year, and I'm very excited about that.
I feel that, though. I'm with you there.
But I'm going to go... Okay, if you're saying Walker-Peters, just to be different, I'll say Wan Foyth, because I love that kid, and I think he's special. Final one, are we going to win anything?
Yeah, we'll win the FA Cup this year.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. The squad depth now means that we can actually compete. I feel we can compete better in cup competitions, and Troy Parrott is going to lead us to League Cup glory this season. You heard it here first. Nathan, we'll finish off with some further reading. You've got something you'd like to recommend.
Oh, yeah. The StatsBomb season preview, historically written by James York, has been taken over by our good friend Joel Wertheimer. I don't think I've ever said his name out loud before. The StatsBomb, I mean, you know what you're getting if you've ever read StatsBomb before, but a hugely statistically in-depth look at our summer and the season ahead of us and last season and the general trends even more long term than that. There's some really good data viz bits in there and on the ways in which we've improved and the ways in which players have improved and also the ways that we have fallen apart over different periods of time. Yeah, a really thorough preview of the season to come.
That is definitely on my reading list for Friday night. I'm looking forward to that. I think Joel writes really, really well. He makes stats accessible. I love what StatsBomb are doing with their visuals, but I must say I don't understand them all. Actually, if you could just stay on the line after this and just talk me through. Yeah, that would be really helpful. Nathan, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Nice one, mate.
And I hope you're all as excited as we are about Spurs' new signings and the season ahead.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter @DavyShambles and SoundCloud @DLindner. So do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.